From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to this Friday edition of Washington Watch. Hope you've had a great week. I'm Jody Heiss, your Friday host and Senior Vice President here at Family Research Council, and Washington Watch gets started right now. All right, Congress moved one step closer to reauthorizing the divisive Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, also known as FISA. This is a key provision that permits government surveillance for acquiring foreign intelligence information. We'll get more into that in a little bit later, but by a vote of 273 to 147, the House of Representatives passed that bill to reauthorize and reform Section 702 after it was blocked earlier in the week by 19 Republicans. But there's at least one notable reform that did not make it through. Maryland Congressman Andy Harris will be joining me here in the next few moments to bring us the latest on that. And speaking of reforms, House Speaker Mike Johnson traveled to Mar-a-Lago this afternoon for a joint event with former President Donald Trump to promote an election integrity reform effort to prevent non-citizens from voting. We'll be talking more about that with attorney Cleta Mitchell, who's the founder of the Election Integrity Network. And Pennsylvania Congressman Scott Perry will also be joining me a little bit later on in the program to discuss the speaker's confab with former President Trump today and how he's hoping that, in addition to highlighting the need for this particular legislation trying to prevent illegals from voting, but in hopes also that today's event will bring some unity to the House of Representatives during this crucial election year. So, again, you don't want to miss that. And then finally this week, we saw the contrast between the two parties when it comes to protecting the sanctity of life.
The extreme MAGA Republicans have been very clear. They do not believe in a woman's freedom to make her own reproductive health care decisions.
It must be remembered that the Democrats are the radical ones on this position because they support abortion up to and even beyond the ninth month.
Well, that, of course, was House Speaker, Democrat leader, Hakeem Jeffries, followed by former President Donald Trump. Well, since Monday's release of President Trump's statement on abortion, the Democrats have absolutely been in a frizzy to, frankly, I believe, distract the public from truly recognizing the left's extreme position on abortion, which is that they want abortion on demand all the way up until birth and paid for by the taxpayers. Well, David Clawson, director of the Center for Biblical Worldview here at the Family Research Council, will be joining me to talk about that for our weekly worldview segment. So we've got a lot coming your way today. You don't want to miss it. In case you do, be sure to check out our website, tonyperkins.com. Of course, a lot of valuable information there for you, as well as archive programs and notes and so forth of today's program. So tonyperkins.com, be sure to check it out. And as FRC continues our Stand on the Word Bible reading plan, just today we finished with the book of Deuteronomy, so we're starting now with the book of Joshua. And I invite you to join us as we get into this incredible book of Joshua and order a new resource that Tony has. It's a digital study guide called Joshua, Finish Strong. This is a journey through the book of Joshua, and it recounts how God's general, Joshua, how he successfully led Israel through the Promised Land, into the Promised Land. And this study guide's going to offer all sorts of practical insight on how followers of Christ are to fight the good fight of the faith. So we encourage you to join us, and you can get your digital copy today by going to frc.org/Joshua or simply text the word Joshua to 67742. Again, that's Joshua to 67742. All right, let's jump into the first topic for tonight. As I mentioned earlier today, the House of Representatives voted 273 to 147 to pass a bill that reauthorizes and does provide some reform to Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, also known as FISA. Of course, this is the provision that governs how, I'll say, use that word loosely, but it governs how federal agencies can collect and use data. And what we have seen, and this is why I use the word loosely, the FBI and other federal agencies have abused that power and in many ways have squandered public trust. And conservatives in the House have pushed for reforms in the final piece of legislation. So what made it through? What did not make it through? Joining me now to discuss this and much more is Congressman Andy Harris. He serves on the House Appropriations Committee, is also a member of the GOP Doctor's Caucus, and is co-chair of the House Pro-Life Caucus. He represents the 1st Congressional District of Maryland. Dr. Harris, always great to have you on the program. Welcome back.
Sure, good to be with you, Jody.
All right, so let's talk FISA. Can you tell us what unfolded today?
Well, it was a pretty interesting day. We started the day with a debate on the bill and six different amendments to the bill. The most important amendment probably was the one, and the most controversial was the one that would allow, or I should say would require, the federal government, if they detect something in one of these foreign intelligence surveillance data gathering, if they detect something that involves a U.S. Or a person on U.S. soil, it could be a citizen or anyone here in the U.S., it would require them to go get a warrant to look at that data. They can look at the data, or they look at the information on the foreigner, the overseas person, without obtaining a specific second warrant, but they would need a special warrant and or warrant, really, to look at data on the American with whom that person is communicating.
And that was an extremely close vote. Tell us about that.
That's right. It actually failed on a tie. There was 212 to 212, as close as you can get. And because it was a tie, the amendment failed. We went on to add a couple of other amendments, some amendments that I think were probably expansive of the ability of the federal government to collect data, including collecting data on individuals in the Mexican cartels who may be drug smuggling. And one of the other controversial aspects is to expand the ability to collect data from a public Wi-Fi place. And that's, I think there was some concern about that. What we did to help mitigate the concern is to take the expiration date instead of 5 years from now to make it 2 years from now, so that we get to, in what we hope is a second Trump presidency, we get to revisit the use of this foreign intelligence surveillance ability by the federal government.
Well, that's probably the best thing that came of it from the perspective of those of us that are so concerned of the ability of the government to spy on U.S. citizens. So this will expire in 2 years instead of five.
That's right. And I was one of the people who pushed that idea, the idea that if we're going to get a bill that we think is not perfect or not close enough to good, then we should at least should not make it go 5 years. We should revisit this in a couple of years. And again, one part of the bill that was good is we actually put penalties on the FBI if they these searches on Americans that they shouldn't be doing. But again, we're in 2 years, we get to revisit it, see if the reforms we put in place were adequate. And if not, we get to change it.
Okay, well, some silver lining there. That's good news. Certainly must be some accountability and some oversight of the FBI and other agencies in their use of that. This has obviously been a huge topic this week. You serve, obviously, on the Appropriations Committee, which actually this week heard testimony from FBI Director Christopher Wray, who talked about looming threats as a backdrop. In fact, I want to show this real quick clip. Clip number one, please.
Our most immediate concern has been that individuals or small groups will draw some kind of twisted inspiration from the events in the Middle East to carry out attacks here at home. But now, increasingly concerning, is the potential for a coordinated attack here in the homeland, akin to the ISIS-K attack we saw at the Russia concert hall.
All right, so he's talking about some serious potential threats that are here in the U.S. right now. How do you think that testimony influenced people on the legislation today?
Well, I have to tell you, I do believe that people are worried. That's only one aspect of that threat. The other aspect of that, of course, is that we have released probably hundreds of potential terrorists into the United States across our southern border. So I think on the one hand, it reinforces the fact that we do need to collect intelligence on foreign bad actors. But on the other hand, we need to make sure that we're not letting foreign bad actors into our country. And that's what I'm afraid where we're falling flat recently.
Yeah, well, listen, thank you for that update, Congressman Harris. This is an issue that is a huge concern to a lot of people. And we're glad that there is some degree of reforms and certainly the ability to come back in 2 years and make some significant changes in this. That's certainly good news in the long term, but a lot of great concern still remains. If I can, let me switch some topics on you. Protecting life has yet again emerged throughout most of the week. You're, of course, the co-chair of the House Pro-Life Caucus, and pro-life advocates may not always agree on strategy, but we can certainly agree that the Democrats are the extreme ones when it comes to the life issue, and they need to be called out for that. They just simply want to pass at the federal level the misnamed Women's Health Protection Act. Your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, Jody, it only protects you if you're female and you're not the fetus. Obviously, if you're the fetus and you're a female, you're certainly not protected by their act. Because what their act does is it allows abortion for any reason whatsoever up until birth, the moment of birth. And that, of course, is an exceedingly extreme position. There is no way that should be the position of the federal government. And again, what we've done is we've allowed this issue to go back into the states. We've allowed some states to take positions. Again, that's the proper way. That's what Roe v. Wade did. Overturning Roe v. Wade allowed this issue to go to representatives of the people, not judges making this decision, but actually legislatures. And I guess, again, the pro-abortion people are unhappy with giving the legislatures that right.
Well, you bring up the main point, and I want people to hear this and grasp it. It is the extreme position of the left. As you said, they literally want to provide abortion all the way up to the moment of birth. That is as extreme as it can possibly get, and now they're trying to distract the public from understanding their position. In fact, the vice president is in Arizona today, where earlier in the week, that state Supreme Court restored some pro-life legislation. But don't you think it's really the strategy of the left right now to do everything they can to distract from their extreme abortion positions?
Well, of course, that's right. And what you're seeing is in some of the referendums that are occurring around the country where they're attempting to enshrine these things into state constitutions is I hope people read these very, very carefully, because in some cases what they're doing is they're literally enshrining in their state's constitutions the ability to abort a baby up until the moment of birth for any reason, sex selection, any reason whatsoever, which is an exceedingly extreme position and not consistent with the majority of what Americans believe. There are a very small minority of Americans believe that you should have the right to kill that baby in the third trimester for any reason.
And they are masters at accusing others of what they themselves are guilty of. And in this case, they are the extreme ones. Congressman Andy Harris of Maryland, thank you so much for joining us on Washington Watch. Always great to have you, my friend. All right, coming up, House Speaker Mike Johnson was at Mar-a-Lago today highlighting election integrity legislation that he plans to introduce. You don't want to miss it. We'll go all down that path right after the break. So stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leela Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Well, good afternoon and welcome back to Washington Watch. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. All right, it is happening right now as we speak. Former President Donald Trump and House Speaker Mike Johnson are holding a joint event at Mar-a-Lago to address the threat and, shall I say, the practice of illegal immigrants voting in U.S. elections. Earlier this year, just as a point of reality, Washington, D.C. passed a law allowing illegal immigrants to vote in all non-federal elections. Well, this is probably some sort of trial balloon that fits the left's tactics to normalize illegal voting practices while insisting it's not happening. So how could this legislation that President Trump and Speaker Johnson, how could it address potentially this ploy? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Cleta Mitchell. She is the Senior Legal Fellow at the Conservative Partnership Institute. She's a former member of the advisory board for the Election Assistance Commission, and she is the founder of the Election Integrity Network. Cleta, welcome to Washington Watch. It's great to have you on.
Well, Jody, it's great to be with you, always.
Well, listen, let's start with your general thoughts on the legislation that former President Trump and Speaker Mike Johnson are looking into and planning to introduce.
Well, I'm happy to talk about that. It's something that I've actually been, every time I've been in a meeting with the speaker since he became speaker or since January, I've raised my hand and asked the question, what are you going to do about non-citizen voting in the November election? Because you're right, Jody, not only has Washington, D.C. enacted an ability for non-citizens to vote, so has San Francisco, so has New York City, and you have local Dallas just passed something that allows non-citizens to vote and to be on local boards. And so there's a big move by the left to have non-citizens taking a not a rightful place in our most precious decisions in our country to vote and to hold elected officials accountable, to decide whether we're going to give or withdraw our consent to what they're doing. And one of the problems is that 31 years ago, when Bill Clinton was president, his first order of business, H.R. 1, when he became president, was what we call the National Voter Registration Act, or Motor Voter, where the federal government requires that states, the DMV, you know, when you go to the DMV to get your driver's license, to get your car title, they always ask you if you want to register to vote. Many states now have automatic voter registration where if you go there, they just register you to vote. And that was because of this federal law that was passed in 1993. And social services agencies, where people go to get welfare benefits and sign up for food stamps and all of that, they are required by federal law, by this statute, to register people to vote. Well, there's just one small problem. The law also requires that every state must accept and use what is called the Federal Voter Registration Application. And on that, it has a little checkbox that says that you're, yes, I'm a citizen, except that the states are prohibited by a decision of the Supreme Court from asking that any potential registrant have to prove that they're a citizen. The Supreme Court 10 years ago held that no, they have to use the federal form, and only Congress can decide what's on that form. So now we have, wow, every state has a statute that says that you must be a citizen to be an elector in that state, but they're not able, states are not able to require people to prove it. Wow. And that's what this bill would change.
Well, that's a big change. You know, I can hear critics right now, Cleta. I can hear people saying, but it's already illegal for anyone who's not a citizen to vote in federal elections. True, but this is all moving in that direction. And who's to say, as you just mentioned, who's to stop them if a state can't verify whether or not they are a citizen? So is that at the heart why this legislation is necessary?
Yes, I think that it is one thing to accept as true a checkbox back at a time when no one would have dreamed that you would have an administration that would completely disregard the immigration laws. And you just think about it, 31 years ago, who would have thought that you would have millions of illegals pouring across the border? Nobody would have thought that. So that has changed. Let me tell you another thing that's changed. 3 years ago, President Biden issued an executive order in which he ordered every federal agency to use our tax dollars to register to vote everybody who comes into contact with a federal agency, as well as to provide voting materials for them to vote. So register and get out the vote. That's what federal agencies are doing with our tax dollars, and they're coming into contact with millions of illegals. And we've had whistleblowers who've brought forward instructions that they have received from the head office and their agency in Washington, instructing them that they're supposed to be giving people voter registration and voting materials, even though some of these agencies, it's illegal.
Cleta, we've only got a little over a minute or so left. It's unbelievable. So much for the Hatch Act. But listen, there's been a lot of chatter in Texas that there's surging voter rolls. Could this be related to the border crisis, do you think, in any way?
Absolutely. That's absolutely happening in every state. And even Texas doesn't require, when you register to vote, you just have to show your driver's license or the last four of your Social Security number. Guess what? You don't have to be a citizen to get a driver's license in Texas, and you don't have to be a citizen to get a Social Security number. So the system's very porous, and the illegals pouring across the border, the Biden executive order using our tax dollars to register people and get them out to vote. We've got a perfect storm here, and we need to try to stop it. And I'm very grateful that the House is going to take this up.
All right, last question, 30 seconds, literally. What advice do you have for viewers and listeners who want free and fair elections? What do they need to do?
Please go to the website that's behind me, whoscounting.us, whoscounting.us, and sign up. Join. There's a join button. and become a poll watcher, become involved in the election integrity movement. We need millions of citizens watching everything that's going on in this election. So please join us.
Thank you, Cleta Mitchell from the Election Integrity Network. I don't know of anybody who knows this issue any better than you. Thank you for joining us. Folks, the more eyes and boots on the ground, the better we all are. All right, stay tuned. After the break, Congressman Scott Perry is going to be joining me. And I assure you, you don't want to miss that conversation. So stay tuned to Washington Watch. We'll be back in a moment.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
Good afternoon. Again, welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your Friday host, Jody Heiss, and we are glad to have you on board with us. All right. Once again, I want to invite you to join our Stand With Israel prayer campaign, including the Stand With Israel Sunday that is coming up on May the 19th. We encourage you to take a little bit of time on that Sunday to pray for Israel. For more information on how you can join us in Standing With Israel, simply text the word Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. All right, I'd like to continue the conversation on election integrity and today's events that are still taking place, actually, with former President Donald Trump and House Speaker Mike Johnson. And joining me now to discuss this by phone is Congressman Scott Perry. He serves on the House Oversight Committee, as well as the Foreign Affairs Committee and the Transportation Committee. He represents the 10th Congressional District of Pennsylvania. General, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to have you, my friend.
Well, it's great to be with you, Jody. And there's a lot on the election integrity space to talk about, but there's also, especially on this day, a lot to talk about regarding privacy and your Fourth Amendment constitutional rights I'm just so disappointed in our product today. But you know, I don't know if that's on your list of topics. But boy,
yeah. Well, listen, we did start the program with that. We had Dr. Andy Harris on with us. I do want to get to the election integrity issue, but let's begin with that. You said you're disappointed in what took place today. I know you're not alone with that, but share with us your thoughts and what's caused the disappointment.
Well, the fact that so many members of Congress just apparently, even though they take the oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States and enshrined in that is the Fourth Amendment, which says that your right to not have to deal with unlawful search and seizure will not be violated. And yet we know the federal government through agencies like the FBI and the the various intelligence agencies have violated it. Law enforcement has violated the law hundreds of thousands of times in the last year and millions of times before that. We had an opportunity to start writing that ship by saying, look, this is the bill was the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. And you know, I think that Dr. Harris and even Jody Heiss, everybody probably believes that we have to do, if it requires surveilling foreign operatives that mean ill towards the United States, we got to do that. But when you're talking about United States citizens, you can't do that without a warrant. And our good friend Andy Biggs, another Freedom Caucus member, former chairman, had the amendment to make sure that they had a warrant if they're going to spy on Americans. And Jody, you know how this goes. Leadership made sure they stacked the deck to make sure it was going to fail, and for sure it did fail.
Well, General, let me listen. We've only got a few minutes left, and I do want to get to the other topic as well, but thank you for your insight on that, and you are not alone in concern over that. Let me begin, though, this next segment, if we can switch gears, with a real quick clip of what's happened with the event today.
Right. The House Republicans are introducing a bill that will require proof of citizenship to vote. It seems like common sense. I'm sure all of us would agree. We only want U.S. citizens to vote in U.S. elections. But there are some Democrats who don't want to do that. We believe that one of their designs, one of the reasons for this open border, which everybody asks all around the country, why would they do this? Why would they allow all this chaos? Why the violence? Because they want to turn these people into voters.
All right. Do you agree that having illegal immigrants voting in our presidential elections is part of the left's goals, which is why we need to get in front of this issue right now?
Yeah, of course it is. They want them voting. They want them to be counted for redistricting. As you know, Jody, every district includes about 750,000 people, but they don't often enumerate whether they have to be citizens or not. And so literally you have people in the country whose allegiance isn't to the country determining the makeup of the district and also the electoral count for president. So they want it for all that. So I applaud. I'm hoping that the maker of that bill is Chip Roy in concert with Cleta Mitchell. We have to do that. And my concern, Jody, is, of course, we'll pass a bill that'll go nowhere in the Senate. We need to attach that bill to something that is moving, that's must pass, and force this administration to sign it. That's what needs to happen.
Well, I don't know if you were able to hear, but we actually had Cleta Mitchell on right before you, and we were talking about all this election integrity stuff and what's happening in that press conference as well. Some Republicans, critics of Speaker Johnson, are also some of the biggest supporters of President Trump. Do you think, and we've only got a little bit of about a minute or so left, General, but do you think the events at Mar-a-Lago today could be part of unifying the conference, at least around a particular issue that could be healthy at this point for the GOP?
Well, I will tell you, President Trump has got most of our country really fired up about trying to change the direction and headed in the right direction. And it certainly can't hurt the speaker to be with him. We do need a unifying message as Republicans. We certainly need that. And if it's requiring people that vote to be citizens, I think that's something that we should, as Republicans, all be able to get behind. And if you can't as a Republican, I would think you need to kind of check and see if you even belong in the Republican Party anymore, quite honestly.
Congressman Scott Perry of Pennsylvania, I can't tell you how great it is to speak with you again. Hope you and your family have a great weekend. Thank you for joining us. All right, friends, coming up after the break, the left pushes our culture to devalue life, and on it goes. The question is, how should we as Christians respond to all of this? We'll address that and much more with our weekly worldview segment right after the break. Stay tuned.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Thank you for tuning in today to Washington Watch. I'm your Friday host, Jody Heiss, the Senior Vice President here at Family Resource Council. I'm glad to have you joining us. Okay, as this election year continues, I must say the contrast between the two parties, particularly on issues like life, when it comes to pro-life, when it comes to protecting life, the difference between the two parties is crystal clear. Just this week, we saw the left seize events in the news cycle, notably President Trump's statement on abortion and pro-life, the decision that came out of Arizona.
There is absolutely zero reason to believe that the extreme MAGA Republicans, the first chance that they had with a Congress controlled by right-wing conservatives, and God help us all, a Republican president would not impose a nationwide ban on abortion.
Well, I at least agree. God help us. Help us all. Dear God, please. That was House Democrat Leader Hakeem Jeffries yesterday. Democrats, not surprisingly, have been trying to distance you and me, the public, the people of this great country. They have been trying to distract us from their extreme position of abortion. They want it all the way up to birth, and in some cases, even after birth. And they want it all paid for by taxpayers. So how should Christians respond to this? Joining me now for our weekly worldview segment to discuss this and more is David Clawson. He's the director of the Center for Biblical Worldview here at FRC. David, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, great to be with you, Jody.
All right. Abortion was in the news, continues to be in the news. It has been all week long. We had former President Trump's statement on Monday. And then let me play a clip that came just yesterday as he repeated his remarks. Let's play clip two, please.
People forget fighting Roe v. Wade was right from the beginning all about bringing the issue back to the states pursuant to the 10th Amendment and states' rights. It wasn't about anything else. That's what it was. We brought it back to the states, and now lots of things are happening, and lots of good things are happening. Every legal scholar, everybody from both sides said, you have to get it out of the federal government. You have to bring it back to the states. It wasn't about anything else.
All right, there is a lot happening on both sides on this issue, protecting or not protecting life. As you've had time now over the last couple of days to kind of sort through all this and think through it and go through it from a biblical perspective, what do you think about former President Trump and President Biden and what they've had to say about this topic?
Well, Jody, there's been no shortage of things to say on the topic of abortion. And let me just make a bold prediction that's actually not that bold, Jody, is that I think from this week on all the way through November, this is an issue that we're going to continue to talk about. It's one that's going to continue to be brought up on a weekly basis, which is why I do think Christians need to be thinking carefully and deeply about the topic. A couple things, Jody, that I think we need to be very clear on. Number one is that the Biden-Harris administration has been the most aggressively pro-abortion administration that we have ever seen. The way that the Biden-Harris administration has promoted the abortion issue makes the stuff that the Obama-Biden administration did look almost tame in comparison, from supporting just awful policies. For example, rescinding the Mexico City policy, supporting the Women's Health Protection Act, which, if it ever became law, would abolish every state-level pro-life law in the country, to even using the bully pulpit of the presidency, using something like the State of the Union to really push abortion. As well, Jody, how could I fail to mention Kamala Harris becoming the first sitting president or vice president to make a campaign stop at an abortion clinic in Minnesota. So I think that's one thing, Jody, we all need to be crystal clear on, is that the Biden administration is intent on pushing this issue. I think the second thing that we also need to remind ourselves on is that the Trump administration was the most pro-life administration that we've ever seen, Jody, from actual policies like the Mexico City policy, which made sure tax money didn't fund abortion overseas, to supporting the Geneva Consensus Declaration, which was uniting nations of the world saying that abortion is not a fundamental right, to putting personnel in place, just really wonderful pro-life personnel, such as the three justices on the Supreme Court, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett, that were ultimately pivotal in overturning Roe v. Wade. So I think that's the second thing. And then the final thing, Jody, that I think we also need to be very clear on is from that clip that you just played, respectfully, I do think former President Trump is at least getting some bad advice. I think there's a fundamental misunderstanding, to say that Roe v. Wade was just about getting the issue of abortion back to the states. Well, I would argue, Jody, that the pro-life movement has been animated, actually, from the understanding that life begins at conception and that all human life is valuable. And so I understand the politics of this are messy, but I do think that the pro-life movement is at its best when we're focused on protecting babies, supporting mothers. And if I may add, Jody, in 2022, a lot of governors, Ron DeSantis, Mike DeWine, Brian Kemp, Greg Abbott, they actually won their reelection by running unapologetically on the pro-life issue. So I know the politics is messy, but I do think as Republicans and as conservatives, we need to lead on the life issue.
Yeah, and we need to understand as Christians that this issue is not a political issue, though it may be in the political world. It may be in the political orbit. It is not a political issue. This is a biblical issue. This is something created by God himself, life. So from a biblical worldview, we cannot be silent on this issue. So what David, do you think is the best way to speak about this, both the best way biblically to speak about abortion and, on the other hand, the value of human life?
Yeah, Jody, I think as Christians, we, you know, all truth is God's truth. And, you know, the insights and amazing things we learn from things like embryology and biology actually make it really crystal clear that life begins at conception. So I think Christians and those of us who are thinking about this and wanting to think about it from a biblical worldview, you know, science is our friend. The science of fetal development shows us things like, you know, that a baby can feel, that a baby's heartbeat begins beating at 6 weeks. At 15 weeks gestation, a baby sucks its thumb and can feel pain and can actually taste the food that its mother eats. And so I think for what we need to do in the pro-life movement is really focus on our messaging. And I think the statistics, the polling shows that when those of us in the pro-life movement talk about these things, the baby's heart beating and the baby being able to feel pain in 15 weeks, that the overwhelming majority of Americans, when we ask them where they stand, when we describe to them the science of fetal development, overwhelmingly Americans agree with the pro-life position. And so, again, biology, embryology are our friends. But as Christians, Jody, we have something even more than science. We have the God of the universe, the creator of the universe. We have his teaching. We have his perspective found in his word. You and I have had this conversation before, Jody, but I love pointing people just to two places in Scripture. Psalm 139, verses 13 through 16, which is King David's wonderful meditation on how God intricately wove him together in his mother's womb. And then Luke chapter 1, verses 39 through 45, that amazing encounter between Mary and Elizabeth, where Elizabeth calls Mary the mother of my Lord, recognizing Mary as a mother, recognizing Jesus as her Lord, even though Jesus is just a couple weeks in utero at that point. And so to answer your question directly, Jody, as Christians, we need to stand confidently on God's word and use that to speak prophetically that all life is valuable, all life is made in God's image, and all life deserves respect, protection, and rights.
Well, I think that's right, and it's a good point. The messaging that you referenced that we need to focus on, in my opinion, should not just focus on abortion. Right. It should focus on life. Yeah. That we are about defending life. It's not we are anti-abortion. We are defending life. We are defending babies. Yes. And I think that just little shift in thought goes a long ways. If I can, let me go a little different pathway for you. In Arizona, I'm sure you've been following this, these state Supreme Court there allowed an older law to go back into effect, and the media coverage over all of this pro-life law has been absolutely hysterical, to put it politely. What are your thoughts on what's happened there in Arizona?
Yeah, Jody, it's interesting to look at this coverage, and it just shows that you know, the media needs to keep the outrage machine going. And so look at the coverage of this law. So much of the coverage talks about this is a pre-Civil War law or Civil War era law, 1864. This is a zombie law that no one even knew was still on the books. And a lot of it's just so disingenuous. This law, Jody, sure, it was passed in 1864. It was in effect all the way until 1973 when the Roe v. Wade decision came down. This law wasn't just something that was passed in 1864 and disregarded. This was in effect for over 100 years. And so I think it's just fundamentally disingenuous to watch the press report about this. By the way, this law, it has no penalties against the mother, against a woman who were to get an abortion. It has penalties against abortion doctors. And so I think it's a good law. It protects babies. And I think I'm pained to see even some Republicans tripping over themselves saying this is a bad law. And I think they're falling for the media narrative. And I think, again, this is where we need to go back to our convictions, Jody, back to our principles. What are we fighting for? And again, the pro-life movement at its best is fighting for babies, mothers, and families.
And our politicians need themselves to understand this is not a political issue. This is not something that they need to check out the polling. This is something they need to understand. We're defending life. Now, you and I, a huge percentage of our viewers and listeners right now, evangelical Christians. But even within that context, when the Catholic Church puts out a statement on controversial social issues, it matters. I mean, they are a big voice. What are your thoughts on why evangelicals should appreciate the recent document that the Vatican released the other day on transgenderism? Tell us about it, and why is this something that we need to pay attention to?
Yeah, absolutely, Jody. So this document that the Vatican released was 5 years in the making, and it's actually called Infinite Dignity, and it actually deals with a host of issues. It speaks to abortion, violence against women, surrogacy, euthanasia, gender theory, gender sex change, talks about poverty and just war. And I think it's important for all Christians to pay attention because, you know, when the Catholic Church says something, you know, I'm a Southern Baptist, I don't look to the Vatican for, you know, authoritative moral judgments. But in the Christian world, you know, when the Vatican says something, people pay attention. And so as a Southern Baptist Protestant, I'm really grateful for this statement because of how clearly it speaks to these issues, Jody. Our times are confusing times. They demand clarity. And again, as a Southern Baptist Protestant, I'm really grateful for the clear stance that the Vatican took in this document, really just generally for human dignity.
So let's go a little bit further in that. I'm sure most folks viewing and watching right or listening right now have not seen the document. When you talk about the clear statement on the issue of transgenderism, for example, how clear were they? What did they say?
Yeah, and again, give credit to where credit is due, Jody. Sometimes the current Pope, Pope Francis, has said things that are very ambiguous and leave, you know, the Vatican then has to come up and clean up some of those comments. Couldn't be more clear in this. On the issue of transgenderism and sex change, I have one line here that I'll just read that I think is fundamentally helpful. The document says this, that gender theory intends to deny the greatest possible difference between living beings, which is sexual difference. And then it goes on to say, this foundational difference is not only the greatest imaginable difference, but it's also the most beautiful and most powerful of differences between human beings. And it talks about how the union of a man and a woman, this is actually the source of children. Again, basic biological facts that are right here. But praise God that the Vatican is just being so clear, basically saying that morally, those of us who call ourselves Christians, we can't get behind transgenderism because it denies fundamental realities that were interwoven into us by our Creator.
That's awesome. All right, David, our time is slipping away. Let me, I just want to throw this to you, and I don't know if you know this is coming or not, but as you well know, I published, had a book release come out last week on election integrity, Sacred Trust. But I've heard that you also have submitted a manuscript for your next book. Give our audience a preview and what they can expect out of this next book.
Yeah, absolutely, Jody. So again, this is hoping to land in the fall, maybe November. But I've written a manuscript that I submitted. It's tentatively called A Life After Roe, Equipping Christians in the Fight for Life Today. So relevant to the conversation we've been having. But I look at the life issue from several perspectives, from a historical perspective, a theological perspective, a biblical perspective, as well as a political and policy perspective, as well as really underlining all that, a worldview perspective. How could we as Christians, this issue's not going away no matter what happens in November, how do we think about this issue from all the different dimensions?
Sounds fantastic. Can't wait for that to come out.
Thank
Keep
you,
us posted
Judy.
On it. Thank you, David Clausen, director of the Center for Biblical Worldview here at the Family Research Council. And friends, that wraps up yet another week of incredible news, fast-moving news. And our mission here is to keep you focused and informed as to what's going on and to hold, embrace through it all, a biblical worldview. Hope you have a fantastic weekend. May God's blessings be upon you. We'll see you next week right here on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.
Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.